and welcome to the newest episode of the Read Right to Left podcast. I, as always, am your host, G from Simply G, joined by my always wonderful co-host, Ray from Whimsical Pictures.
Hi, guys.
And this month, we are doing a series spotlight.
Yep.
A series that we've mentioned many a time, waxed poetic many a time on the podcast. One of the absolute foundational seminal pieces, especially for classic shoujo, and that is, of course, The Rose of Versailles.
Yay! We're going to France.
We are absolutely going to France. So this is a absolutely just hugely influential
seminal
series. Yeah. Ryoko Ikeda, her just historical fiction drama that not only has had huge impact and still echoes through manga and Japanese popular culture to this day, but really helped crystallize, along with like other very well-known Year 24 series, it just has such an influence on what we now think of as manga, and especially for this period of this historical fiction interest revival, maybe. I don't think there's a character, especially a female character, as well-known and beloved as Oscar, our Oscar. Main character in this series. Oscar is not only loved by everyone within her series, within her story, she's pretty dang beloved by just the people in general.
Yeah. Lady Oscar, or Lord Oscar, the inspiration behind decades of Mulan-style sort of cross-dressing heroines in shoujo manga, which have been sort of a staple ever since, from, like, Ouran High School Host Club to, more recently, like, The King's Beast. Just incredibly iconic. Also, basically responsible for the Takarazuka Review becoming, like, coming into its modern era. Which is interesting to me. Obviously, Oscar has become an iconic character for them as well. And one of the few times that the top star plays a woman. So.
A woman trying to be a man is playing a woman who's raised to be a man. So, like, you know, it just makes sense.
It's very gender. It's all very gender. She's very otokoyaku in the way that she carries herself, too, so. She's very aware of how the ladies in court fawn over her, and she thinks it's funny, so. So we always talk about, like, obviously Hagio is my bread and butter. And we've done an episode on Takemiya Keiko's Tutera as well. But this is, those are more niche series within, like, 70s shoujo manga. They ended up being hugely influential later on. But with the exception of, like, the Po Clan, like, these weren't necessarily, like, huge hits. They were more like cult hits that found their popularity a bit later. Not so with The Rose of Versailles. This series was hugely, hugely popular. Insanely popular. Which you can see throughout the Udon Entertainment release of the series, because it has like the original magazine promo pages for each chapter, and you can see all the taglines that are like, you know, the huge shoujo hit that's sweeping the nation. such and such copies in print kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, like, understandably, audiences were introduced to Oscar, Lady Oscar, or Lord Oscar, as you said, and just absolutely fell in love. This truly is a series that was almost completely carried through by the strength of a singular character, right? Like, without Oscar, there'd be no Rose of Versailles.
Which is interesting that you say that, because it brings me to my next point, which is that with, like, some of the Hagio stuff that we've talked about, or some of the, like, Shoujo Comic is the magazine that those types of more experimental works tended to run in, because of an editor that I've talked about, who was very interested in sort of transforming what shoujo manga could be, kind of thing. So it's like he had this like policy of just accepting everything, regardless of whether he thought it was going to be a hit. Those aren't necessarily series that are as, I guess, driven by reader polls as The Rose of Versailles came to be. Which is a really interesting aspect of The Rose of Versailles, I think, is just how much it responded to reader polls and, like, continued to do so throughout the run. Leading to, most famously, a change in protagonist for most of the series.
Yes.
Only switching back to the original protagonist right at the end. And, after... should we spoil the whole thing? I mean, it's about the French Revolution. everybody dies. I they mean, all
it's
die.
It's from the 70s. It's 50 years old at this point. If you
couple large prisons get stormed, you know. the populace is armed, you know. So obviously Oscar dies too, but she dies during the storming of the Bastille. So that is not the end of the French Revolution. That is the beginning of the French Revolution.
Yes.
So, Ikeda wanted to follow the whole French Revolution all the way through, but once Oscar and Andre were gone, the series just, like, plummeted in polls. And she refused to bring Oscar back, despite outcry from the public. so she kind of had to hurry the ending there, and she ended up just sort of finishing with the death of who was the original protagonist. As the title suggests, the Rose of the Palace of Versailles, Marie Antoinette, who is our shoujo heroine to begin with, and our shoujo heroine to end with. But all through the middle, it's all Oscar all the time, baby.
And that's the only character anyone really cares about. And it's interesting, as you said, because truly this was initially a story about Marie Antoinette. You can understand why Marie fits within this kind of era of shoujo as like a young girl, and it's set in this pre-revolutionary France. A lot of Marie Antoinette herself came from royalty, but it was a much different lifestyle once she came to France. So it was, you can understand, like, wanting to have that. I'm not advocating for royalty here, but, like, you can understand being, like, the small fish in a big pond, fish out of water kind of situation. And then, as if Marie had stayed the main character, because she is prominent throughout the entire series, she doesn't just completely disappear throughout the middle, but if she truly was the main character in the sense that we think of protagonists, we could follow a lot more of the nuances for, you know, who she is, right? As a young, a teenage girl moving to a complete, or being married off to a completely different country. Nobody really knows what to expect from her, being absolutely lauded and adored, and then through vice, you know, coming to downfall. It's a very interesting, I mean, it, obviously it's based on actual history. I don't know how much Marie Antoinette was actually like shoujo manga version Marie Antoinette, but you can understand, like, why Ikeda chose her as the main character initially. But you can also understand why audiences saw Oscar and was like, no, this is the character we want to follow. This is way more interesting.
Well, Marie Antoinette, at least the way that Ikeda, like, characterizes her, very much fits into, like shoujo manga heroine sort of traits that were popular at the time, and I mean remain popular now. She's this sort of naive, like, tween girl thrust into a political and romantic situation that she doesn't understand. She's forced into a loveless marriage, and all she wants is to experience true romance. And she ends up meeting, you know, a handsome brick of styrofoam, Fersen. having a whirlwind forbidden romance with him. It starts off whirlwind, but they kind of are together for like 19 years, which is kind of crazy. That, I mean, this is all real. This is all stuff that happened. I know that Ikeda based her portrayal of Marie Antoinette off of a particular biography that she read. But I'm struggling to find that right now. But it is sort of that take that is, like, neither demonizing nor glorifying Marie Antoinette, but more so, like, I would say a more, like, complex portrayal of her as this sort of girl who, noble woman who didn't quite know what she was getting herself into, and just sort of in her despair and her, the restrictions of being, you know, the Queen of France, in her loneliness, leaving the country of her birth and entering a loveless marriage, neglected her duties and just siphoned so much money away from the people of France to go towards her various vices. And, you know, had a husband who, like, was a doormat, more or less. Which tends to be the common portrayal of him as well. So
The Dauphine, Louis is not well regarded ever. he certainly is very henpecked, and certainly just doesn't have a lot of interest in the country, in his wife, in much of anything. And that's
he that loves his locks, man. The... loves making his locks.
Yeah, he just really likes locks. Which, again, is actually, like, historical fact.
Yep.
Apparently.
Just really into making locks.
What I wanted to bring up is, considering that this obviously is a very early 70s series.
Yep, 1972 to 1973, to give the specific context.
The fact that it focuses on revolution is very much, like, the 50s and 60s were a huge time for especially young people in Japan to be advocating and protesting against larger society, especially it was seen a lot in universities. It was a very, very volatile period. for political movements and political student political activists in Japan. So it really, I think that kind of led to, like, I think a lot of people really responded to this idea of revolution. There's always been this romanticization of the French Revolution in certain aspects. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most interesting European historical events.
Every event is just so fascinating, and like,
yes,
you just, there's no bottom to the all the drama and intrigue that you can learn about in history from that period. There's so much to draw on.
Yeah, and most importantly, it completely changed the trajectory of the French political mm-hmm. movements and scenes compared to the entire rest of Europe. Like, every other part of Europe was still doing the monarch thing. And France was like, no, we are of the people. We're doing this republic. We're gotten rid of those guys. And it's... we see echoes of that in how French politics plays out even today. It's just a really... You can understand why it's an appealing setting for very grand, dramatic, melodramatic stories and character pieces, and you can so why that appeals to writers, creators, mangaka, and why it appeals to audiences, why there is such a fascination with Marie Antoinette and the French revolutionaries. It's just real, it's just such an interesting thing. I think,
and,
regardless.
I'm really glad you brought up the student protests in the 60s, because Ikeda Ryoko was herself very involved in student uprisings in the 60s. She was a member of the youth branch of the Japanese Communist Party. Very outspoken about her political beliefs at the time.
Why does that not surprise me at all?
Which I think also makes it interesting, the direction that the series took, rather than just, like, focusing on Marie Antoinette, instead focusing on this sort of fictional character who, very quickly becomes, disillusioned with the nobility she grew up in, and joins arms with the revolutionaries, becomes a symbol of the revolution itself in her fiery death. she was very much involved in politics throughout the 60s. Seems like she'd, like, sort of settled down a bit once it got into the 70s, but it definitely, like, those political beliefs very much pepper the Rose of Versailles. She spent 2 years researching the French Revolution before she pitched the series. I think you can see a lot of that. If you hear me sniff a bit, like, I have a cold again, so don't mind me. We're doing our best.
So, as you mentioned, Ray, this particular series has been released in its entirety in English from Udon Entertainment. They are beautiful hardcover releases. I believe the original series is in four volumes, and then there's
the
spin-off stories and sequel stories in a fifth single volume, volume 5. And this was one that I think, despite it being hugely popular, despite it in Japan, I should say, like, hugely popular in Japan, it had huge cultural impact, and I'm sure... obviously there's a huge interest, well, not huge, there was certainly a collector's and academic interest in this series, but I think, like a lot of classic shoujo, a lot of classic manga full stop, it wasn't until very recently that this was kind of a viable thing for us to get into English as well.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I remember, it took forever for this series, after being announced, to actually get released.
Ikeda is notoriously, protective of this property, which is understandable, yeah. But she's like,
absolutely,
you're not releasing my series unless it's done right, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so from initial license announcement to actually, hey, I've got Volume 1 in my hands, it's not just a pipe dream fantasy, I think it was 6 years? Five or 6 years?
Something like that.
It was a long time. I believe it was 2013 when it was announced, and then 2019, maybe, when we got the first volume. It was a lot.
Yep. Beautiful books, though.
Yes.
Weighty. They're heavy boys.
Well, they're complete, like, they've got the glossy paper, all of the
full
color
gloss
pages. They're just beautiful, beautiful books.
Really solid translation, too.
We've talked a little bit about kind of, like, what this series is about, and we've talked a little about, we've mentioned some characters, but we should actually, like, talk a little bit about this main character who is so well-known, beloved, influential. We need to talk about Oscar, because we've kind of circled around a bit.
The series starts by introducing us to three different characters, being like, they were all born in the same year. Two of them being actual historical figures, and one of them being fictional. And those are Marie Antoinette, Hans Axel von Fersen, her eventual lover, and again, handsome cardboard. Lady Oscar Francois Dujarget, who was born as the sixth daughter to the commander of the French Royal Guard. And he is, like, seriously, another daughter? No sons? Who am I going to have lead the French Royal Guard after me? Where's my heir? So he's just sick of this, and he's like, I'm never gonna get a son. So you know what? This beautiful little baby is gonna be Oscar, and she's gonna be my son. I'm gonna raise her to be the next commander of the Royal Guard. It's gonna be great. And so that's exactly what he does. He raises her as his son. And it's interesting because she's, like, even though he's raising her as a son, he's not, like, hiding her gender from anyone.
Yeah.
So I said, like, Mulan-style heroines, but, like, it's not really. Like, she's not hiding anything. Everyone knows she's a woman, except, like, sometimes people will mistake her for a man when they first meet her, but then, like, someone will quickly be like, no, haven't you heard? She's a woman. She is more dashing than any man. and she, like, is, you know, this incredible soldier, natural-born leader. Everyone adores her. Marie Antoinette adores her. She ends up very quickly within the series becoming like, the leader of Marie Antoinette's guard's detail.
Mm-hmm.
So she's sort of at Marie Antoinette's side through all of this stuff. She's sort of there as this kind of, I don't know, not cold, but, like, cool sort of advisor.
Yeah.
So Marie Antoinette is, like, getting in with the Countess Polignac, and I can't pronounce French names, so you guys better be ready for that. The Countess Polignac, you know, who gets her into gambling because she's terrible at it and she wants her money. And, like, she's like, ugh, I just want a woman I can confide in. And Oscar's over here like, bitch, she is stealing your money. And Marie Antoinette's like, how could you say something like that? Oscar, I thought you liked me. Why must you treat me so? That's the part where I would be like, if I was Oscar, I'd just be like, fuck it, eat the rich, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Never mind, actually. yeah, so that's Oscar. As we said, she gets sort of increasingly disillusioned with the nobility that she is a part of. She takes in a girl named Rosalie Lemorlier, who she's a common girl, and her mother is run over by the carriage of the Countess Polignac, and she's sort of left orphaned by that, and Oscar runs into her, like, when she has, like, a, I don't know, 11-year-old or something girl, is, like, so desperate, she's trying to prostitute herself, and Oscar's like she comes on to Oscar, and Oscar's like, girl, I mean, I'm sorry to say, but I don't swing that way. but she ends up taking in Rosalie, and, like, you know, in learning about, you know, the dire straits that Rosalie is coming from, and, like, you know, all of the, like, famine and stuff that the common people of France are dealing with, she starts to be like, hey, wait a second. This is really bad, actually. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people should be equal and all that stuff. She's got a very strong sense of justice, Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as Marie Antoinette continues to sort of drown herself in excess, Oscar becomes disillusioned with her as well. Although she still is, like, very close with Marie Antoinette. Like, to the very end, she loves her, like, as a dear friend, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But she's like, you know, the things that this person that I love is doing are, like, horrible. And I can't stop her, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, this continues through, like, Marie Antoinette getting into her romance with Cardboard Man, Fersen, and, you know, Oscar's like, come on, girl, really? You are married? Everyone, literally everyone knows you are shagging this guy. It is, like, the commoners know. It's, like, yeah. the talk of town in the court. Everyone's calling you a slut, girl. Like, at least be discreet. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, it's not like the French courts were all particularly loyal, right? Like, the debauchery of the French royals, and Louis the 15th especially, was just, like, mm-hmm. absolutely everyone knew, right?
Yep.
Louis the 16th, different story. But Louis the 15th just had slept with everyone and everything.
Look, Louis the 16th. So like... Louis the 16th was very preoccupied with his locks. Okay.
Yeah, he's ostensibly asexual in a lot of media, and, which is fine.
Sort of how he's portrayed here as well.
And it's not... So it's not like her having an affair is altogether, like, a horrible or unexpected thing, but, like, the sheer audacity of it in being so out in the open. I don't know. Also, the fact that she was the queen that was brought from another country.
From another country, and she had an affair with a foreign man.
It was a little bit more politically sensitive than just, like, the actual Delphine, like, yes, I have all of these French lovers, right? Like, it doesn't matter, because they're all French, so, you know, whatever. But I also, the whole story beat around this, I don't want to call it a love, well, I mean, it is sort of a love triangle, because, as you mentioned, Fersen is, like, Oscar also has an interest in Fersen a lot of the series.
Yeah, which is
and so
an extremely funny plot point, just because of how that, like, there's absolutely no reason for her to, like,
be in love with Fersen. And I think,
like, they're friends, but it's like, she's literally like, blessed, I am a woman after all. She's literally, like, every time she... meets eyes with Fersen, and she's like, no, my ovaries. It's something.
It sure is a thing. Which makes me think, like, it's interesting to consider what Oscar's role in the story would have been if she wasn't as popular as she was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if she hadn't become the main character, I truly think that she would have just been, like, the third part of that maybe love triangle, and because she gets scorned, like, that's why she joins the revolution or something. Like, I don't know
if she even would have joined the revolution.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speculate, because that's not the story that we got, but it's interesting because of how, like, early Oscar was introduced in the story, and the fact that, like, Marie and Hans and Oscar are all, as you said, all born in the same year, so it is meant to be like, oh, they're all kind of tied together in this weird fated way. But
all
really,
I can say is that if Oscar hadn't have been that popular, Andre wouldn't have gotten his handsome Squidward glow up, so...
Which would have truly been, you know, just the worst thing that could have happened. Oh, poor Andre.
Poor Andre. That's all you can really say about him. Poor Andre.
I mean, he kind of won in the end. I mean, everyone died, so nobody won in the end. But, I mean, he got the girl, and... He got the girl that everyone wanted, so truly, he's doing all right.
Hey, they got to bang once.
One time before they died tragically in a horrible battle.
At the Bastille.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's iconic. Mm. Yeah, Andre was going to be a super minor character. He's just, sort of, he's like the grandson of one of the nannies or something. He's the commoner.
Yeah. He's the childhood friend character that, like, gets introduced because he's just, Oscar needs to know some people, right?
Yeah. Like, Oscar needs, like, someone to bounce ideas off of, and, you know, he, like, lives at the same estate that she does, and, you know, they're childhood friends. So, basically he's just there so that Oscar can be like, I just can't believe what Marie Antoinette has been up to lately. Can you? kind of thing. She's just, like, talking at him.
And he's like, yes, I agree. That sure is something.
And then you'll get just, like, a panel of him being like, oh, Oscar, I love you, but I can yes. never have you. And it's like, wait, what? Okay. This is happening now, I guess. Nah, but, the whole, like, the trajectory of that romance, I think, is, very interesting. In terms of, like, gender, because, this is something I think I am getting from, the excellent book, Passionate Friendships, by Deborah Shamoon, but, like, she talks a lot about, sort of the way that although Oscar and Andre are ostensibly, like, a heterosexual relationship, like, it's, you know, Andre is a cis man, Oscar is, ostensibly a cis woman. Like... I don't know. I would argue that maybe if the series was written in 2023, she'd be more likely to be, like, non-binary with the way that she presents herself. But she's very much, like, in the series as it exists. She's like, I'm a woman, and I'm straight. I like dudes. And that's it. Even though she has this whole thing with Rosalie, and it's like, okay, girl. Mostly straight.
Even though she makes all the court ladies, you know, hearts so aflutter, she's like, no, I am truly just the most heterosexual person, as you can tell, because I am in love with this block of styrofoam, and you're like, okay, yeah,
okay, all really, right. Girl, really,
I think,
girl, you can do better.
Yeah, so much better. And I mean, Andre had that glob. He is like, he was a nothing character, but he was better than Hans, I gotta say. Like, he had a little bit.
At least
bit
they're
more
like childhood friends.
Exactly. At least there's an established relationship there, we say, as people who are like incredibly biased to the childhood friend trope. But.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
I was going to say, this segues very well into one of our questions that we got, which is from @WhimsyDearest, and I think you answered this a little bit, is, do you think Rose of Versailles was ahead of its time in how it portrayed gender?
I mean, it's still 1972.
Yeah.
So, it's like... I think, it's interesting some of the ways that it is dated, because, like, especially, like, when it got into, like, Oscar's crush on Farzan, it's like, she literally is just like, ugh, I'm a woman, my entire body yearns for him, I guess as a woman I must be in love with a man, and it, like, like, a queer woman living in 2023, like, to me, it was, like, incoherent at first. I had to put my brain into, like, that mindset of, like, if you're a woman, you must be attracted solely to men. Like,
yeah.
Because it, like, does not, it doesn't compute to me that, like, sexuality and, I guess, physical sex... specifically, like, not even gender, just, like, physical sex.
Yeah.
Would be, like, so equated with each other. And it is, like, it's almost contradictory because it's, like, there's so many girl crushes in this series.
Yeah.
All the court ladies, their hearts are aflutter over Oscar, but also, like, Rosalie, like, is so gay.
Yeah.
And she's, like, open about it, too. She's like, you know, I am madly in love with this woman as a woman. Like, and she's so picturesque with Marie Antoinette. Like, oh, my heart is aflutter. But that's, like, the whole class S thing. I guess we're supposed to see it as, like, you know, just the girl crush of a child. But, like, it's interesting.
The Class S part of has just been, like, fundamentally in shoujo forever. So it's not so much that it was ahead of its time in how it portrayed gender or sexuality, because, as you said, this is a 1970s shoujo series that does have, that does subscribe in very weird ways to the gender binary. But fundamentally, there was just a lot of this stuff happening in shoujo anyway. Mm-hmm. And it might, it's, so, and then I think back to, like, Claudine, which is also by Ikeda, mm-hmm. which is
yeah.
about a trans man, right? But because, again, the age of it, the vocabulary used mm-hmm. there, and the understanding, or, like, the story arc of that that very short book is not, like, it doesn't inherently fly in 2023, but it's interesting that those are the sorts of things that Ikeda was thinking about in a way mm-hmm. that maybe wasn't typical for the demographic overall. So in ways, like, yes, it is, but also in ways, like, no, it absolutely isn't. As you said, like, the idea, Oscar looks at Hans and just, like, she's like, oh my god, oh, I love him. And you're like, because truly, it is my woman's heart that, and like, what is, it's very weird. But it ties back into the melodrama of it, right? Like, it ties mm-hmm. into just, this is how the wrought emotional experience of a character is exacted. And it's not trying to be realistic, necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's trying to be theatrical in a way that,
yep.
like, we see in Takarazuka and in mm-hmm. on the stage, where it is over, more than, larger than life. That's the word I'm looking for. It's larger yeah. than life. It's.
I was gonna say, I think, in terms of just, like, Oscar's overall gender expression, this type of heroine was sort of not something you saw in, like, the 60s shoujo as much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see it in Princess Knight, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of the origin, which is Tezuka, Osamu Tezuka's love letter to his hometown of Takarazuka. And you see a sort of similar interplay where it's like, you know, the sort of masculine heroine, you know, being done in by her female emotions. but rather than having a male heart and a female heart, I think Oscar is sort of a progression of that towards yeah. just, like, no, this is just how she is. Like, she just,
yeah,
she just is a very sort of non-binary presenting person. Like, she
mm-hmm.
Enjoys, you know, the person that she is. She's proud of who she is. And if you don't like it, fuck all y'all, to be honest. Neil, like, how dare you speak to the commander of the Royal Guard in such a manner? Also, just, like, again, I really like that way that she's not, like, in disguise as a man. She just, like,
yeah,
is a very mask-presenting woman. You know, even when we see her in a dress, like, she's almost in disguise, like, as a woman there. She's like, because Farisa yeah, doesn't yeah. recognize her. And she's, like, her facial structure, the way she's drawn, is not different from how Ikeda draws men. So.
Yeah.
So it's, like, I think there's, like, progressive aspects of that. Like, I think there's almost a new type of heroine that was sort of developing during the time, and Oscar is mm-hmm. exemplary of that. We see, like, an expansion of the kinds of heroines that we see, and the roles that they're sort of able to inhabit. So in that way, I don't know that I would say it's ahead of its time so much as I would say it is exactly of its time. Like, these are the things that are happening in shoujo manga. And they're cool things, but that it's what was happening.
It's very cool, and I think, again, it leads to that period of experimentation where AFAB mangaka were able to just get a bit weird within the constraints of the 60s and 70s of Japanese society. Like, for good and bad, this is, as you said, very much of its time. And I think this is also when people started to be more aware of, like, breaking out of this, you know, gender binary as well. We weren't quite to gay rights yet, but it's just like, I think people are becoming a little bit more aware that there is more than just what was the ideal of the early 20th century.
I also think it's just a reflection of shoujo manga stories being allowed to become more complex. We have not just these, like, sweeping romances in this story, but this story of, like, revolution. You know, Oscar has a lot of, like, romantic foibles, but also, like, the main thrust of the story is her getting involved in the revolution and, you know, giving her heart over to that. So, in terms of gender expression, I wanted to go back to the relationship between Oscar and Andre. So we start off, it's very funny because they're very different looking from each other at the start of the series. You know, Andre's got his hair in a ponytail and he's got a very, like, townsperson B kind of face. He's very generic looking. But as the series goes forward, and especially as Oscar becomes the main character, Andre appears as a love interest, which again was sort of in response to, reader polls and reader letters. Ikeda had not been considering Andre as a love interest for Oscar at all, but there was a lot of reader interest in having more of him, so. which, I mean, they're childhood friends. Like, who cares about Fairzen? Who cares? He goes on to be a despot.
He's so boring. Like, he's Fairzen's just such a boring character. Ugh, God. Like, I know he was a real dude, but I'm sorry. He just has no charisma. No, like, he's just not interesting. No pizzazz.
Personal issue, but Snowtroop is putting on one of the many different chapters of the Takarazuka, like, Rose of Versailles musicals. Next year, they're putting on Fairzen and Marie Antoinette chapter. And I think one of my favorite top stars currently is leaving on it because it's, like, one of her favorite shows for some ungodly reason. And I'm like, no! You're leaving on Fairzen?
I'm sorry, Ray. I'm sorry that it's come to this.
My loss. My incredible loss. Well, we don't know for sure if she's leaving, but, like, signs point to yes. Anyway. But yeah, so Andre and Oscar, as Oscar sort of becomes more and more the main character, as Andre is presented as, you know, a possible love interest, they grow to look more and more like each other.
Yes.
Especially after the whole, like, Black Knight thing, which was A very manga plot development. Andre ends up sort of getting a haircut, and gets his hair looking exactly like Oscar's. And around this time, he also, like, loses sight in one of his eyes. And he starts going blind in the other one as well. Which makes it more difficult for him to fight. So we see, like, again, I'm drawing from, Deborah Shamoon's sort of really interesting take on their relationship from the book Passionate Friendships, which I highly recommend. I think we've mentioned that book before. It really is, like, super good. It's an academic book, but it's pretty accessible. They, like, we have sort of this pair of the very masculine woman, Oscar, with Andre, who is sort of increasingly emasculated as a man. You know, he is a soldier, but he is losing his ability to fight. So in that way, he's sort of emasculated. He's also, like, in general, in their relationship, like, Oscar's the one making the decisions. Like, he is content to just, like, go along with the ride. Except for that one weird part where he was just, like, overcome with despair and tried to poison both of them. That was weird.
Yeah. That was very weird. We had to put in some drama, right? If it wasn't dramatic enough, we needed... that was a strange direction. But it's fine. We got past it. It's fine.
He's usually he's not that much to handle, like, he's pretty passive, but every once in a while he just has a feral moment where he just, like, attacks her, and it's like, what happened? I don't know, I guess he's like a dog, he just, like, he like, jumps up on you sometimes, because he's just so excited to see you. Oh, Andre. What's really interesting is that, like, especially towards the end, we start getting this, like, imagery of the two of them as these, like, mirror images of each other. They're compared to the twins, Castor and Pollux. It's like, you know, we've always been, like, together. We're the same person, you and I, and it's, like, interesting how they almost come across as, like, a same-sex couple. Their, like, mutual sort of gender queerness, as they get closer to their death, and particularly, like, their love scene, like, their sort of consummation moment, they, like, it's very yaoi. It's very, like, definitely, like, I don't know, even though they're, like, super straight, it's super queer, you know what I'm saying?
yeah.
In vibe. Which I think is interesting.
Both interesting, it's also understandable as to why it's the, like, couple that people latched onto with this series.
Imagine if Oscar had ended up with Farzad.
If that had happened, then we wouldn't have just the amazing amount of Rose of Versailles doujin from Fumi Yoshinaga. We would just that wouldn't exist.
That would be tragic.
Which would be truly the largest tragedy in all of this. Worse than the French Revolution. because I couldn't It's the ship that honestly, like, launched 1,000 boats. It's
interesting. Oscar and Andre, in Takarazuka, like, the Oscar and Andre chapter is, like, a hard one to cast because, like, they have to make sure that the second in line Otokoyaku who plays Andre is taller than the top star. The height difference is very important. And I'm like, just let Oscar be a tall king. Like. Anyway, sorry. Brain rot. But yeah, OTP of the ages. Truly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we've more or less exhausted the interesting gender shenanigans. I will say, in terms of, like, we've talked about a lot, you know, extensively about, like, Hagio, because of our personal proclivities, but, and mine, specifically, but I think something that I kept sort of noticing as I read this was, like, the sort of, like, ambiguous nature of, like, the relationships in Hagio's manga and how those tend to be, I think, leave room for those series being able to be, like, more relatable to, like, asexual readers. Like, there is an interpretation there that's, like, you know, like, the nature of love doesn't have to be romantic. Like, we all need love, but we don't all need the same kind of love. Whether we're talking about, like, Poe or the Heart of Thomas or what have you. The Rose of Versailles is very much, like, I could understand being very alienated if you're, like, an asexual reader, because it's very much, like, you know, you are, there is something missing from your life. There's something wrong with you. There's something broken if you have not experienced romantic love.
It's your female heart that's yearning for it, and if you don't have that as an AFAB person, then, oh my god, you are truly not, you haven't experienced life.
Yeah. So that was something that kept bothering me throughout the whole thing. Especially with, like, Rosalie, where it's like, we see her experience this, like, passionate love for Oscar, and then they're like, nope. You get to be with another brick of styrofoam. that's mean to Bernard, but he's kind of just, like, generic revolutionary who sometimes runs around in a mask for some reason. Just like, I guess Rosalie needs herself a man, so how about this one? That's like, does she, though? Does she really?
Wait, we can't give the probably the second most hated character a good happy ending. We need to just wrap it up. Wrap it up.
So distressing. I like Rosalie. I think she's cute.
She is cute. She's not very popular. She certainly wasn't popular in the polls. I don't think people like her very much.
Yeah, she was very unpopular in the polls, which is extremely unfair. I like her. I don't like how in the English translation she keeps saying, moi. that's moi. Very weird. it's like, I'm not getting, like, commoner from this. I'm getting, like, doesn't quite understand how to speak French.
Moi.
Moi.
It sounds like weird, pretentious, like, rich girl who thinks she's very cultured but doesn't really understand the language that she's trying to imitate. I don't know. Yeah. It feels weird.
But it's, like, it's supposed to make her come across as, like, because there's a couple times where it's, like, she'll try to say, like, moi, I, and then Oscar's, like, no, that's not how court ladies talk. And it's, like, I don't think it's how anybody talks.
I don't think it's how humans talk, but...
but, yeah, justice for Rosalie. And did we have any other, like, major things to get across? How do you feel about Elaine? Oscar, like, choosing to step down from her position as the commander of the Royal Guard and, joining the, like, Palace Guard. He's, like, the other sort of major character, I think. And, of course, he's, like, madly in love with Oscar, and it's, like, stupid, but...
yeah.
He's got manly stubble. I don't know if you heard it. That's what makes him different.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course. You know, everyone else is extremely clean-shaven, except for Oscar's father, who has a mustache. But it's...
There's a lot of mustaches.
Yeah. You didn't hear... I don't know if you heard me but when you said Elaine, but I just, like, had the longest sigh. I was yeah.
He exists. He's like, it's hard to figure out where he stands, I don't know, is what I found. It's like, are you with the revolution? Are you, like, not? Like, what are we? But the style of the narrative is so much, like, it's so much, like, narration. Like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and this, then this happened. Yeah. It's like, with characters like that, it's like, you know, this could be, like, a more nuanced sort of portrayal of, like, a common man who feels, like, done in by, like, all the shit happening around him. And so it's, like, he almost resents the revolution to some extent. But, like, he also is, like, has an interest in it. But it doesn't really come across that way. It comes across more like what is he after? What does this man want? Why is he so mean?
I mean, fundamentally, he's just there because I don't know, just to give another love interest. Another person vying for Oscar's attention. And
how many does she need?
All of them. Everyone. The entire Versailles court needs to be in love with
Oscar Dujardin.
Exactly. So, you know.
You know what? All of these people vying for Oscar's affections, I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't have, like, Maximilian Robespierre fall in love with her. Just saying. Or Saint-Just. That'd be awesome. Yeah, Robespierre is here. Saint-Just is here. Mm-hmm. All the other, like, major revolutionary figures are sort of, like, rolled into Bernard. More so than being their own, like, people. There's, like, one guy who has a weird face who sort of represents, like, the nobles who sort of put their weight behind the revolution, hoping to use the confusion to vie for more power for themselves. Stuff like that, but... Yeah, again, once we get into, like, the actual revolution, at that point, like, Oscar and Andre are dead, so...
Yeah.
We're kind of rushing through to Marie Antoinette getting the guillotine.
We're speed running the revolution until we get to the extremely dramatic climax wherein Marie Antoinette is beheaded, as per expected.
Yeah.
This is a tragedy, I guess, a historical tragedy, wherein, as Raya said, and this is a 50-year-old series, so it's not spoilers, everyone dies. a couple characters make it out, but none of the characters you care about make it out. Rosalie, maybe, but everyone else dies.
The, like, two pages where we see them, like, rip her son away from Marie Antoinette, and, like, turn him into a revolutionary, and he's just like, Shtuayan, who's that lady?
Oh my god.
Truly just, like, speedrunning everything after the Bastille. And Marie Antoinette keeps, like, ping-ponging back and forth between, like, oh, if it isn't the consequences of all my own actions, and, like, this revolution. How dare they, these uppity commoners. I'm going to die like a queen. And it's like, okay, I guess, like, go off. you're still getting beheaded. Not very sympathetic in her final moments, I would say.
No.
Also, it was weird how, like, I thought Rosalie, considering she married a revolutionary, had, like, completely thrown her weight behind, like, the revolution, but she's, like, there tending to Marie Antoinette in her final days. She's I love you, Marie Antoinette. You're so pretty.
It's very strange, but I think it's just an extension of that, like, this is the person that the person I cared about. So, therefore, through my amazing, almost saint-like kindness and goodness, I will show you compassion in your final days. And you're like, okay, well, alright, you know, that sure is a thing. Yeah, a lot of mixed messages there with the ending.
But yeah, so now we've talked about every part of the series, so we can go into our other set of questions from our unofficial moderator at Storied Shelves. Gives us a few. First one, how did you first come across this series? For me, like, I think for you as well, but, like, you know, it's hard not to be aware of this series once you get into, like, manga and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, like, once it finally got licensed, like, that was, like, a huge announcement, and we were like, yeah, Berubara, we're gonna get it. So, you know, it was kind of a no-brainer to pick it up once it finally did come out. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's one of those series, even it is just, like, an anime fan, there's so much that references Rose of Versailles. Like, it's just ubiquitous, right? And even if it's not, like, there's cutaway gags, or not, like, referencing Berubara in just everything, and you're like, okay, well, I guess this is something important. And in a, yeah, as you said, it, once you're in the manga sphere, it's almost impossible to not have some awareness of it. Even if you don't, like, necessarily know what it's about. So much so that I couldn't even tell you when I first, like, became aware of Rose of Versailles and Oscar and, like, this all-encompassing thing that just has had such an impact. More so than, like, any of the other classic shoujo that we've talked about on the podcast that gets referenced, that are seen as, like, extremely well-regarded classic pieces of manga and of this era. This is just, like, so far beyond the realm of, like, what popular manga was. Like, it had an impact on the entire industry, so much so that, like, you couldn't go anywhere in Japan and point to Oscar and say, like, who is this, and people wouldn't know, right? Like, everyone knows. Everyone knows. She is the, I mean, in the similar sense to, like, Doraemon, everyone knows. It's the Mickey Mouse of this, of Japan.
Of the French Revolution.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, my first series, one of them was Fruits Basket, which, like, has a lot of, like, gags that are, like, Rose of Versailles, like, manga faces with, like, the blank eyes and the, like, pinky out kind of, like, shock faces. So, I mean, I feel like it was way back then that I first, like, learned that there was this particular retro series that, like, these gags were sort of referencing. So, like, it's been ages and ages. And then, like, it was a huge announcement when I think it was Right Stuff first got the anime.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's Discotech now, but...
Mm-hmm. Nozomi, which was Right Stuff's anime branch.
Yep. So that was, I remember that announcement, that was a big deal. The anime is, like, very influential in its own right. It's directed by Osamu Dezaki. So, has a lot of very iconic sort of visuals. Very iconic theme song, too.
Plus, also, but... like, you don't even... Again, there's GIFs. People use them as like, reaction GIFs all the time.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be on, like, Animanga social media to come across it. Because, especially the anime is, like, so dramatic, and it has all of these amazing reactionary faces.
Yeah, I just, like, you truly have to treasure the part where Marie Antoinette is forced to speak to Louis the XV's, like, mistress, Madame du Barry. And it's just, like, 2 full minutes, and it's amazing.
And it's like, oh my gosh.
There are certainly a lot of people in Versailles today. And she just, like, cackles. Like,
so good. Oh my god. It's in... So, I think truly there are maybe... Especially for those of us who... are a little bit more aware of, like, of Year 24 and classic shoujo, not just classic manga, but, like, classic shoujo in particular, or who read shoujo josei, that it is kind of impossible to avoid, right? Like, it's just, you have an awareness. I could understand someone coming from, like, Shonen Jump and not necessarily knowing what Rose of Versailles is. If all you've ever read is Jujutsu Kaisen and, like, One Piece, then, yeah, maybe you don't know. But also, that's, I think, an exposure thing. Yeah.
Even then, it's like, there's still references to it in there that you're just not picking up on, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, those are the kinds of, like, animanga fans who just, like, turn on one episode of The Rose of Versailles and go, that looks old, and then they turn it off. So,
I can't which is a shame, because
we didn't even talk about the art in this series, but it is spectacular.
No, oh my god, it is. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's
lush. It is, like, and the glossy pages, like, these deep black inks on it, it's so beautiful. But yeah, you know, whenever we're talking 70s shoujo, it's this lush, you know, exquisite, gorgeous artwork that is just, like, very, like, maximalist, like, more is more is the aesthetic here, which I live for. So you can't be into Takarazuka if you don't appreciate maximalism. But yeah, so what do you think is so influential about this work? Another question from at Storied Shelves. I just think it's, like, extremely readable, for one thing. Like, it's very entertaining from beginning to end. Which, I mean, is, like, partially just, like, the fact that this period in history is inherently compelling, as we talked about, but... And then, like, the character of Oscar, as we mentioned, is just, like, so iconic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's... There's... This is a series that's been around for a very long time. It's impacted most everything, especially in manga. If you haven't, you have certainly come across it as an anime or manga fan in some capacity, even if you don't realize it. It's just even beyond, like, anything. Even the most popular stuff of today is probably, like, the scope of the impact. We'll see. I think that really the only thing you could compare it to is, like, One Piece. And it did it in, like, so few less chapters than that series.
Yep. Yeah. And then our last question, also from @StoryChelfs, is what did you enjoy the most and the least about this work? So, a good question to wrap us up. The thing I enjoyed the least about this work was the side stories. I thought they were boring. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're, like, detective stories about this little girl named Lulu. But they're not very good mysteries. So.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I would say that in addition to that, I found a lot of the... Yeah, I mean, the romance subplot and the love triangle thing is just, like, so... I mean, I understand that it's necessary, but it's also so unnecessary. Like, there's other cool things we could have been doing, and instead we spent so much time with such a boring dude. I'm like, I don't care.
I wish, like... You know, maybe keep Oscar alive longer or something. But, like, I wish we could have, like, taken our time with, like, the meat of the revolution, you know? Because there's so much, like, fascinating shit that happens after the storming of the Bastille. And I just wish that we could, that could have gotten more time. So, you know, maybe have Andre die and then, like, Oscar has to deal with the grief as time goes on, but also we're, like, living through the rest of the revolution kind of thing.
I think also, to that point, it would have been a very interesting story beat if, yeah, as you said, Andre died, there's the grief thing. If Oscar was going through that, but also, like, having to reconcile her feelings about her... interest or her dedication to the quote-unquote common people, right? Like, her new revolutionary stance with, like, going against all of these people that she spent, like, her entire life with, really.
Yeah.
Like, decades of her life, people that she's actually really grown to care about. Like
imagine, like, reconciling Oscar, those things. Like, you know, in the crowd, looking up as Marie Antoinette is guillotined, like, you know, this woman that she's served loyally for so many years.
Absolutely. And that feeds into the tragedy. And if you just, if you wanted it to be a tragic ending, you could have Oscar then take her own life, right? Like, that she's lost Andre, she's lost Marie, like, who else? I mean, Rosalie, but, like, it's, she's lost the people she cares the most about, right? So, and you could tie it up as, like, oh, and yes, you know, everyone's dead, it's sad, truly the most somber note, but I do think,
or
that
we could, like, go further and, like, have her because of her noble blood getting eventually, despite her dedication to the common people and to the cause, like, getting tragically guillotined during the Reign of Terror, like, you know.
There's a lot of potential, as we've said already. Like, the French Revolution is such an interesting period of history, and there is, I do think that, quote-unquote, killing off Oscar so early in the revolutionary piece, like, I understand that part of that was emblematic. Like, again, she became almost this martyr for the revolution. But it would have been more interesting. Like, you can make Andre the martyr, right? Like, that could have become something as well. Give him a little bit more to do posthumously.
Well, and I mean, he's got this interesting backstory where, like, he is of common blood, but he's lived his whole life serving the nobility. You know, but his passion for Oscar leads him down the same revolutionary path as her.
Yeah.
You know, and it almost makes more sense to have him as, like, this martyr for the revolution because he is a commoner and she is not. So, we're just writing fan fiction at this point.
But you can admit it would be good fan fiction. Like, it's interesting fan fiction.
So, this is what Takarazuka's been doing since 1974, is just, like, writing French Revolution fan fiction over and over again. Covered every single event from multiple angles. It's their favorite topic. Brilliant. And what did I enjoy the most? Apart from the art, which again is just stunning to look at all times, especially later in the series, and like the dresses are so pretty, lavish. Yeah, I mean, I think the character of Oscar, she's just, like, she's so fun to read about. She's got such, like, strong convictions, this strong sense of justice. I think it's compelling watching her be pulled between the nobility and the revolutionary cause. I actually think her romance with Andre is pretty compelling. Not her romance with anyone else, but with him. You know, I think that her relationship with Marie Antoinette is super complicated and compelling. And I think the portrayal of Marie Antoinette is also, like, complex and interesting to read about. You know, she's not necessarily a super likable person, as she's portrayed here, but she's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
So, those are my favorite things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much in the same boat. Oscar is by far the highlight of the series. She gives it so much more interest than just a what could have been a...
This is what happened during the French Revolution.
Exactly. A dramatized version of the French Revolution, with a teenage girl, you know, teenage Marie, like, running around and shenanigans and that that sort of thing. I think Oscar, as we've said, or as I've said already, made this series what it is. It wouldn't be Rose of Versailles without Oscar, right? And I agree. I think that her relationship with Andre is for the romantic stuff, but even just like obviously he wasn't a hugely, like, he didn't get a lot of stuff to do, especially early on. Yeah. But he certainly had a very interesting dynamic, the friendship dynamic as well as the romantic dynamic with Oscar, much more than any of her other potential romantic interests, especially the male ones.
You have this sort of, like, interplay of, like, you know, things didn't work out with Farzan because he could only see her as a man, and like, things didn't work out with Girardel because he could only see her as a woman, but Andre just sees her for her, kind of thing. Oh, I have to mention the fact that Girardel, as per a later sort of side story, because Ikeda and Hagio, like, know each other, Girardel is canonically a member of the Poe Clan, which is delightful. there is, a side story in the Rose of Versailles that establishes that he is an immortal Pampanella. And there is also a Poe Clan, like, sort of omake chapter that follows him being a member of the Poe Clan. So, fun fact.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
It's the Hagio connection.
Brilliant.
I'm glad he didn't overstay his welcome, God.
Yeah.
Another brick of styrofoam. There's so many interesting men in the French Revolution. Like, why do we get only the boring ones?
Because I don't think that Ikeda was interested in any of the like, male nobility. They were certainly overshadowed by Murray and also, like, the women of the court. I would say that the most interesting, like, male... I mean, obviously, like, real life is not a fucking, like, story or doesn't have to have character arcs, but, like, the interesting characters, male characters are in the French Revolution are revolutionaries.
Yes. This is so... why I'm here for an Oscar Robespierre, like, courtship. That man was fascinating, okay?
Yeah, he but it's like in the series,
he's there, but it's just like he's always got the same expression. They're just like, this guy was really important, also. And it's like, but why not make him a character instead of Bernard or whatever the fuck?
Because, right, I don't know, there. I feel like maybe there
was
some
Danton?
Actual...
Where's Damulon?
I feel like there's a... Ikeda didn't want to mess around with, like, real historical figures too much, so she didn't want, like, her fictional characters impacting real history too much, because she's like, no, this... I need to tell, like, the actual story of the revolution.
But which... also, I'm going to pretend that the captain of the Royal Guard was a woman.
Yeah, well,
and
exactly.
Everyone knew about it.
It has to be manga, right? Like, it has to have some weird bullshit, right? Like, so,
but
of
if
course.
We're talking about weird bullshit, we should have more to do with these revolutionary men, because they are something else.
Well, exactly. And I think, to that point, again, if we'd had more of Oscar, like, participating in the revolution, if she didn't die, that we would have, maybe, there would be potential to spend more time with these more interesting male characters. I mean, it's a bit of a catch-22, because I don't know how... much Ikeda is, like, interested in those people, like, historical figures.
Well, I mean, she was a communist.
Exactly. But, like, you can... They don't get a lot of limelight in the series, which is because she is focusing on, like, the monarchy side of it. And I think, again, that could have been potential of, like, the first half you're looking at the monarchy, the second half you're looking at the revolutionaries, right? Like, they're of the juxtaposition of things. But I don't know, it's... Maybe we would have just ended up with a really boring Robespierre. I don't know. we will never know, because it doesn't exist.
He's just characterized exactly like Farazan.
Exactly. Like, it could have just been,
like,
not as
looking
interesting.
Looking like handsome Squidward as he sends people to the guillotine. It's like, Oscar, I love you.
And,
but I
and
cannot be with you.
I cannot be with you because you are of noble blood. And also she's conflicted because she still loves Andre, but he's dead, and so she doesn't want to betray him in his... And I'm like, we need to stop writing fan fiction, but you can understand why the Dojin girlies jumped on this, right? Like,
she runs off to Sweden to become a horrible despot with Fersen.
So yeah, I think probably I the thing that I enjoyed the most is that it does have just such a interesting character. There's a lot to love about Rose of Versailles. There's a lot to like criticize and, you know, talk about with it as well. But there's a lot to love.
I'm just imagining
a lot of that...
being reading this manga as it was coming out must have been such a blast.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, especially for the readership who, like, you know, they're in Japan. Rose of Versailles doesn't exist yet. It's coming out, you know, chapter by chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know much about the French Revolution.
Yeah. It's the 70s. I don't know how much European history is taught in Japan, especially in the 70s. So I'm sure they were aware that there, like, was a revolution, but, like, maybe not the specifics of it all. So it would have been exciting. It would have been interesting and fun. And especially when you have...
It would have been so fun to, like, argue about it with your little girlfriends at school.
Yeah.
And week or month.
Yeah, sending in, you know, your fan letters and all the responses of make Oscar the main character. We don't care about Marie. Make Oscar the main character.
Send her to the guillotine. Off with her head.
Truly. And with that, I think we've come to the end of this podcast. Thank you everyone who sent in your last minute questions. It was a bit of a scramble for this month, but we do appreciate everything that you guys do. If you are wanting to follow the podcast, you can find it on YouTube on my channel Simply G. That's two words. You can also find it on all of the exciting podcasting platforms, all three of them that still exist. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. We release a new episode every single month. Well, most every single month, except for the months that we don't, but typically every single month. Next month, we will be doing our annual top five new debuts for the year, which is very exciting. I always look forward to that. So, bit of a fun one for the end of the year. Good way to ease into the end of 2023 and get excited for 2024. As always, you can find me on social media, on Twitter, nay, X, at GReads. That's GEE_Reads. You can also find me on YouTube, as mentioned, at Simply G. That is two words. Also, follow Ray on her Twitter. It is at WhimsicalPix, P-I-X. And nothing else. No other social media. Just that one. Check out her YouTube channel. It is not fairly dormant, but does have some good videos on there.
My YouTube channel is Whimsical Pictures. It Has been dead for quite a while, but, you know, there's backlog there if you want to check it out.
Absolutely. And with that, thanks everyone. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye, guys.
Bye.